Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Hello and welcome to The Power of Reinvention. I am so excited to have you here today, and I'm even more excited to have my guest, Lauren Rotolo, as our guest on the show today. How are you doing, Lauren?
I'm great. How are you, Kathy? Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it's such a pleasure and so fun to reconnect. It's been years, as we just kind of noted, even when our last text messages were with each other.
Way too long.
Deep diving into a super, super cool project together. And I'm really glad that we've reconnected and to have you as a part of our conversation on the show. So
thank you.
Really great.
I'm really excited to reconnect and be part of your show.
Well, thank you. I do want to share a little bit of your background, because you have been on an incredible journey, and I just want to sort of give a little context to our guests before we jump into our conversations. Lauren is an author. She's a content creator and a DE&I and disability advocate who brings her experience and an inspirational voice to organizations globally to help them understand why organizations need to include the disabled community in their DE&I and talent plans. And most recently, Lauren was at Johnson & Johnson, where she oversaw all corporate video content, including all executive and communications content for their LinkedIn channel and for their enterprise marketing partnerships. She also won 3 James E. Burke Marketing Awards for her video storytelling during her tenure. Her most recent successes include a 20-episode live show entitled The Road to a Vaccine, featuring Emmy Award-winning journalist Lisa Ling. The live show was a breakthrough for J&J, where Lauren generated over 150 million views and 100 million press impressions and viewership in more than 110 countries. Before J&J, Lauren spent almost a decade at Hearst Magazines as Director of Entertainment Partnerships. She worked with the editor-in-chiefs to create some of the high-selling covers for Seventeen, Marie Claire, and Good Housekeeping magazine. Her first-person essay, Get Shorty, which shares her philosophies on living with the rare genetic disorder, McCune-Albright syndrome, and was published in Marie Claire magazine in 2009. Soon after, Lauren penned her book, which is called Unstoppable in Stilettos, A Girl's Guide to Living Tall in a Small World. In the book, Lauren shares her struggles and achievements growing up as a disabled person, and she offers her advice on life known as, quote, Lauren's lessons on achieving everything you want in life, even when life throws you lemons. Lauren, a born and raised New Yorker, understands that diversity and being challenged means as it is not just informative for her, it's the fiber of her being. And I really wanted to share every detail of what you shared with me, Lauren, because I was so afraid we'd get carried away talking to each other not get to pull up some of these really important, fascinating, interesting, and compelling parts of who you are and your life. So thank you for giving me the background to be able to share with our audience, because it says so much to me about who you are and just the perseverance and everything that you've accomplished in your life, professionally, personally, and I just want to dig into all of it. So thank you.
Great. Well, I'm so excited to share my journey and the career trajectory that I've had thus far.
Thank you. So I'm going to start with a really fun question, which is always so intriguing, which is, who on earth was little Lauren? Who was that 5-year-old? Who was that 12-year-old? What were your aspirations? What were your, you know, are you doing what you thought you'd be doing? And share a little bit about just sort of the early years of, you know, how you became who you are today. Were there signs of personality traits that, you know, made you realize today that, yeah, I always kind of had that in me, or were these things that were honed over the years? Like, it's always fun to kind of look at them. Sometimes we just don't stop to think and put two and two together like that. So it's
no, I don't think we do. And so who was little Lauren? Well, Lauren is still little, but at the age of 5 years old, I made a breakthrough in my life. My parents made a breakthrough. We all did. And because that was a moment in time where I was so challenged in life. At that point, my doctors, because I'm live with a rare disease that is called McCune-Albright syndrome that affects both my skeletal and endocrine system. And at that point in my life, the trajectory of me walking was really downhill. Mm-hmm. I walk normally, you know, at 2 years old, I was running. At 2.5 years old, I was in a full body cast. You know, up before I was 5 years old, I was in four of them and had already one surgery. And so, again, my trajectory was just very different than your average 5 year old.
Right.
But due to being so challenged, I had an opportunity to really create the personality that I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I took on my parents' voice, and my parents' voice was very severe in that Lauren can do anything that she wants to do. We're never going to hold her back. If she wants to sit in a wheelchair the rest of her life, then she will, because that is what she wants to do. But my trajectory was never that. Mm-hmm. I only knew that I wanted to be a regular 5 year old and play with my friends. And whether it be going to a roller skating party or playing in the sandbox or going swimming, whatever that was, I wanted to do that. And I didn't see myself in any other way except that I had to be more careful. But I also had chosen at that point, because I didn't really have a choice, do I want to sit or do I want to stand? And I don't think that your average 5 year old can really understand that. Because how are you going to live into something? You know, I'm 46 years old now. So you're talking for 41 years, I have lived into a promise that I made myself at 5 years old. And that was to never sit. And whatever that took was what it took for me. I had to move forward. I had to do that. So like my perseverance, just because I was five or I'm 46, is actually probably the same. Because I haven't had a choice, or, you know, we all have choices, but in my head, I only had one choice, and that was to persevere forward, take my path forward. And I never thought about anything about that, and had a network of people around me that would say, well, if that's what you want to do, then we're going to stick with you on that path. And I think that that is so important, because not many people can say that, but not many people can also live into a promise that they made themselves. And so while I had to reinvent the person that the world was telling me that I needed to be, but in my head and my heart, I just didn't see that. So I had to reinvent or create the person that I wanted to be and show the world. When you are physically disabled, you are constantly challenged because of people, not because of your own abilities. It's the world around you that challenges you. The world around you wants to limit the things that you can do. Because if you really believe it and you feel it, you can do it.
Yeah.
And yes, physical therapy, 6 days a week, you know, an hour a day, plus physical therapy homework, which clearly I didn't like to do my school homework, so I wasn't going to do my physical therapy homework.
Right.
But that was like the kid that I was. Like I had to, at 5 years old, I decided to walk. So I had physical therapy. And physical therapy was really more like training like an Olympian. At 8 years old, I started to go through menopause because of medicine that they put me on. Then we had to reverse that. By the time I was 12 years old, I finally like became into a woman like everybody else did at that time in their lives. And I went on. But like that determination and that person has really was created on that day that I had to make that decision. And I've never looked back. And, you know, that that woman, whether it, she was a 15-year-old girl backstage at a concert and saying, I need to meet the head of promotions, which I did.
Right.
And then sent my resume. Of course I did. I was like, I'm getting backstage. I don't care about the talent. I want to know who's in charge. Mm. Who is who brought all these people? How did they bring them together?
I love that.
You know, like,
so
what's the recipe?
You had this very curious mind.
Super curious. My whole life, you know, like, if I could, like, live in, like, Law and Order and, like, watch mysteries unhappen all day long, I would. Because I'm curious.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, they say children have a curious nature. Well, I've been a curious child and a very curious adult. And, but the perseverance, so, like, when I went after this job, I was 15 years old. I was in high school. And I wanted to be a radio intern in the marketing department, in the promotions department.
Right.
Who the hell was I? Like, literally, who the hell was I except this little tiny girl with a huge voice that said, you're going to hire me. And so I made a resume and I faxed it. Now, remember, this is like early 90s.
You're like, hey, like, people, do you know what a fax machine is?
Do you know what a fax machine is?
Yeah. Remember those days.
You take that piece of paper, it goes,
right. Yeah. No, it's like, do you know what a fax machine is? Yes. Do you have one? Yes.
No.
Okay. Right.
Yes. So I created a resume with my parents, and I even went as far as went to the DMV so I could get working papers so I could drive. Like, I went all this far. I created this job in my head, and I was like, well, obviously they're going to give it to me. Like, I don't even understand why they wouldn't.
Right.
And after 30 days of sending my resume to the head of promotions, she called me, and I thought that was, like, the greatest thing ever. And she was like, you need to stop sending your resume. Like, we cannot hire a 15-year-old. And I was like, oh, but I can, because the principal is going to allow me. The DMV is going to allow me.
Right.
Why don't I just come to your office? And she knew that I was never going to give up. And that is how I've literally lived my life. No matter what position, where I am, whether I want to get into a restaurant or a club or a job or, you know, create the next best video or have somebody on that cover, whatever it is, I'm determined to get to the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's just who I am.
And that's
how I've always
been. I was going to say, and that is what has served you so well. And I think what's so interesting, Lauren, is that, you know, there's a world of humans out there listening to this podcast who are faced with challenges, whatever they are, right?
Right.
That perhaps have not had the life lesson that you had, the determination that you needed to have. But that was a choice for you. You chose to not be victimized by your physical condition, by what you were dealing with from a health point of view. You let it fuel you. And I think there's such an important message in that, you know, we have to make a choice to let challenging moments, times, situations, environments fuel us to get beyond, no matter what those are.
And I think it's so important to say that, like, not only do we fuel ourselves, but we have to inspire ourselves to want to be better, right?
Yeah.
We have to inspire ourselves to what we see and what we want to be and manifest that. And that's what I've always had to do. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times, it was not easy. And it's still not easy. And nothing in life worth living is easy, right?
Yeah.
And so whether that be, it doesn't have to be, yes, I had a physical disability, so the world saw me differently, and therefore they wanted to, you know, take away and limit me of what I could do, or they had, I call them, they're the producers of my life. Before I even open up my mouth or I take a step, they know, they believe that they know exactly what my life is like, how I've lived, what I do, you know, whatever, no matter what it is, but they have no clue that my life is probably as similar to yours as the next person.
Right.
And they don't think that because all they see is surface.
Yeah.
And we are a very surface society. And once you get past the surface, and once you start to, if you're curious, right, like we spoke about curiosity before, if you're curious, then you're going to ask me questions. And I'd rather you ask me questions than be the producer.
Yeah.
Because you'll find out that I'm not that different than anybody else. Yes. You know, I have assistance in walking. I call, like, my crutches are like my transportation. Most people mm-hmm. just have to count on their two legs as transportation. Right. So I have extra, but I also wear 5-inch heels, like, every day. And what sometimes those 5-inch heels come with a 2-inch platform, too. Yeah. So, you know what? I need something extra just to hold me up. But, you know, yeah. and that's how I go after life. Because life is going to give you challenges, but you don't need to constantly live into that challenge. Right. You need to make your life as easy as possible. And if it's hard some days, other days are going to be easy. And so it's just, I chose this life, yeah. you know, but and this life also that. Chose me too.
Well, and I think that that's the beauty of it. And I think the work that you've done in your career, the, you know, your personal and professional life and what you've created for yourself speaks to really who you are.
Thank you. I mean, it is.
And you've done incredible things. You were at the front end of the content creation world, right? I mean, let's mm-hmm. take a moment to yes. talk about that. And I know this from conversations we had when we first met. I remember sitting in a little coffee shop together years ago in New York. And when you started to tell me some of the history of what you had done, and I was like, holy cow, like, you know, are we that old? But we were both in a space where we were understanding this concept of content curation and creation and storytelling mm-hmm. in all its glory in its very, very early
where you
days.
Started to create a narrative for a brand. People didn't do that back then. They didn't know. I did one of the first ever TV magazine integrations back in, you know, 1999.
What was that? Which one was that?
So for TV Guide, when we went from a digest-sized magazine to a full-size magazine. You know, so cute and little.
Yeah, wasn't it?
But I was there. Like, I launched TVGuide.com. Like, there was no TVGuide.com before me and a team, right? So, like, we had created a website. Nobody did that. Like, that was, like, a big thing back in, you know, 90s. And then when we went from a digest-sized to a full-size magazine, we came up with this idea that we're going big. How big can you go? So we looked at the market and what was on television at that time. And it was an ABC show. And it was like an HGTV kind of like renovation show. And so it was with Ty Pennington. So what did we say? We were marketers. We said, okay, well, if we want to be in the show, because that's the biggest show now on television.
Right.
Let's put Ty on the cover. Like, and so you created these like barter deals, but yet, so you would say, okay, the value of the cover is worth this. Here's a television integration. This is what we want. And we created a very symbiotic marriage together. And so we had a certain audience for the show. We wanted the audience from their show to buy the new magazine. And so, you know, you think about all these things and we created a full episode together, you know, and they really weren't, you would see like integrations of like a magazine, like sitting on a coffee table or things like that. But it was the entire show, the entire segment, two segments of that show was dedicated to TV Guide. And, you know, because we were so involved in it, we also, there was always a charity component.
Right.
And I had a lot of say in what that charity was. So as a disability advocate, we went to a camp that was in Arkansas, and we gave 10,000 TV Guide books, and we created a media center, and all of the furniture that Ty created was out of TV Guide magazines.
And
so all the chairs and the media center.
It's crazy. And it was,
like to be able, I was talking to somebody today, like to be able and go into these places and have that opportunity to shape the way people see your brand or to shape the way a country may, you know, medicine may be today in a country. Like there's so many amazing opportunities if you just think outside of the box.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love
so
it.
We were able to do a lot of fun stuff.
And what was the transition between Condé Nast and going to J&J? And when in this trajectory did you author your book? and, you know, what, talk a little bit about that.
So I left TV Guide to go to Hearst magazines. It wasn't Condé Nast, it was Hearst.
Right.
And at that point, there was an editor-in-chief. We literally started on the same day. So it was mm-hmm. Joanna Coles and I.
Oh, my God.
And she was the editor.
One of my favorite people.
She was a first-time editor-in-chief, which was at Marie Claire.
Yeah.
And, like, we created a great bond together. I took her to Hollywood.
Extraordinary woman.
I would drive her around to, you know, because she's a star. She still is. She was back then,
she
and we knew it.
Extraordinary.
And
I just saw her back in June at Cannes Lions.
She's just an incredible force.
Yeah.
And she and I, like, we took this liking to each other and we worked with each other so much. And she just said one day, the first thing that she said to me was, "I don't know why your hair is blonde." Mm-hmm. "We're changing that." And I was like, "I've always been a blonde." And she was like, No. We're going to change your hair. It's going to be fabulous, darling.
Oh, my God. I
changed my hair color to red. So, like, many, many years later, it's still red because at the end of the day, she was right. And then she said, people need to know you. People need to know the story because you are a force.
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of terrifying. Like, you walk in a room and you're telling people what to do and how it's going to work and where we need to be.
And it's very disarming because people don't think that's the role you'll play. You're this little human.
Exactly. I mean, I'm like 4 foot nothing. And here I am, you know, fashionable little girl walks into this room and all of a sudden is like taking command of it. No, that doesn't happen in the real world. And so she was just like, listen, like, people need to know who you are. And I was like, absolutely not. I do not want to do it.
Yeah.
There's no way. Like, why do people need to know me? I'm like very happy in this little world that I've built. And I have a bunch of friends. I have a great family. I have a great job. Like, what else? I'm very happy. And she's like, no, you have much more to give. And so after a little bit of convincing, I did a first person essay and then it became the most read article that year. And because of that, publishers came and we were talking and, you know, I decided to write a book. And that really put me on this path of advocacy. I think that when you know, it wasn't like I got in an accident and all of a sudden I was disabled or, you know, something happened to me. This was just Lauren and Lauren's life. And I didn't think of I always knew I was different. I didn't think that my story mattered. And I think that that's a big message. Every person's stories mattered. And what I was able to do through people really telling me that, yes, Lauren, like, your voice matters, is write a book. And that put me on this trajectory of being an inspirational speaker, going in, talking about the disabled community. It is the largest and most diverse community in the world. So you're talking 1.3 billion people globally, 64 million people, 64 million adults just in the United States. That's 1 in 4 adults. So we can be around a table in a restaurant and 1 in 4 of us is going to be disabled. And I don't think that people really understand the definition of disability. At one point, everybody will be disabled one point in their life.
Right.
And it's just a matter of taking something away from you.
Yeah.
Whether that be you break your ankle and all of a sudden you are on crutches and you can't walk. Whether that, you know, whatever that may be, you become deaf later on in life.
Yeah.
You know, God forbid you get cancer. Like, these are all the things that fall into disability. And I think that people think of it as a bad word, but it's actually not. I believe that my disability is a gift.
Right.
You know, the fact that I am sure.
Rise above a challenge.
Exactly.
Right?
And so I think that if people just think about what that definition really means, it doesn't change who you are. It actually adds value to who you are. And you become part of a group that is the most diverse group in the world. And so that's what I'm out there teaching is for people to not be afraid of the word disability and to not be afraid of the people that are disabled, because we are just like you. And, you know, something like you can be, you know, you can be white female disabled. You can be black female disabled. You know, it's the only one that transcends across every other community. There is no other community out there that will transcend into others, you know? Right. And so when I go into people, and especially from, I believe that corporations need to hire people like me. I've worked in major corporations. This is the first time that I'm on my own in 25 years of working.
Right.
The first time that I'm not working for a major corporation. And I never saw anybody that looked like me when I worked.
Right. And do you feel that now that we're seeing, obviously, there has been so much more focus on the DE&I communities and the growth of that within corporations, do you feel like they're really, you know, I hate to say it, but this kind of the greenwashing effect, you know, it was like, oh, we'll hire that person and we'll, you know, say that we're doing this. And, you know, they're trying.
You have to give
credit where it's due. And often it's a big job and it's turning around the Titanic, but it's also not, if you're really committed.
Agreed.
Right. I think there's a duplicity in all of that. Right. And mm-hmm. This is just my perspective, you know?
No. And I think that your perspective is 100%. And I think that when we define DE&I here in America, first and foremost, you look at race.
Yep.
And you have to look beyond race. And that's what I'm here to discuss. And that's what I'm here to let people in and to say, and to empower them to say, well, there are other communities out there. You know, it's like everybody, just like marketing, we all have our movements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whether that be a black and brown movement, whether that be an LGBTQ movement, whether that be a woman's movement, we have had all these movements. Disability has never truly had a revolt or a movement. And that's fine. And we don't need it. We just want to be inclusive. And yeah. So I truly feel that you're not a fully inclusive company unless you're including all.
Yeah.
And so if you either include all, you don't include any. Like, it's just not fair anymore.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I'm challenged to go around the country and the world and talk about this and help, you know, and I've been doing it. And I think that when you open the eyes and you hear people like me talk, you become less afraid.
Right.
And you only become less afraid because now you're educated.
Well, you're humanizing the conversation. You're educating.
Right.
And look, we all know that we're paralyzed when we don't know something. The moment we know something,
right,
we're not paralyzed. I used to always say, like, you know, like when I'd buy a new piece of equipment, like a DVR back in the day or something, I just would like read the manual so that when I touched the machine, I wasn't afraid of it. Like,
exactly.
Coming to it with knowledge empowers you to now deal with it and work with it and be connected to it and understand it. And
right, because knowledge is power.
We need to be better at doing that. And
correct.
I think we saw a big movement in the last 5 years, especially around the BLM movement, where there was a really strong push and advocacy to read, to get educated, to talk to our friends that perhaps were different than us in any way. And you know, let's not forget that every single day of our lives. We just all
right.
have to be better human beings. I mean, you know, it's not that difficult to be a good human and to be.
And I think we have to be curious. I think
curious.
People stop
I was
being
just
curious.
Say.
And if you're not, like, your curiosity is going to lead to education.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't matter what, you don't have to go to Harvard to understand. Right.
Yeah.
You just have to be and want to connect with people. And I think that, you know, technology, we've really lost that, like, human connection. Like, we talk to machines. Like, we're on this all day long.
Yeah.
And everybody wants
yeah.
to. But talk to an actual person. I like
yes.
to talk to people.
And
I like to get
dialogue,
to know people. I want to
talk
know.
At people. Like, social media, you're, like, spewing out messages to people, but you're not having the give and take repartee
exactly.
and a dialogue. So what are you doing? What are you doing? How can invite you into more rooms where more of these conversations are happening? Do you feel like you're doing as much as you can at the moment? Are you getting access to the rooms you need to be in, the platforms you need to be heard in to have more of these conversations?
I mean, I think that as I strive, I've only been, you know, really full time doing this just for a few months now. There are still a lot of conversations and a lot of doors that I need to walk through to make sure that our messages are clear and concise and that we're just included. And I think that a perspective from, you know, a woman that has been successful, and I think a lot of people don't see that, right? Mm-hmm. So when you see, when they focus on somebody with disabilities or they hire somebody with disabilities, they're usually hiring them at a very low level. And they're never able to achieve or reach that glass ceiling, whatever that glass ceiling may be for them or for that corporation. And so you don't see a Fortune 500 CEO that is disabled. You don't even see a Fortune 1000. And so it's really time that we started thinking and shaping the way that we even think about DE&I, whether that be internally or externally, right? So it starts with hiring. It starts with inclusion of all kinds of people in your advertising, in your marketing campaigns. And I think that we're getting there. And I think that in a Hollywood perspective, we're getting there. But, you know, there are so many shows on there. There are disabled people in there, but that's an actor playing that. We want to be in that role. Nobody's going to play somebody better than themselves.
No, I'm like racking up a list of people in my brain that I want to talk to you about that you're not connected or, you know, in conversation.
Yeah, and so I think it's just seeing, I think it's just seeing more and more people like me, whether that be in the workplace, whether that be on stage, whether that be in a film or an advertisement, whatever it may be. Seeing is believing. And I think that, and listening. And I don't think a lot of people are listening. And once they start listening to my words, whether that be an inspirational word or whether that be we could just have coffee talk, like whatever it may be, it's just have an open and honest conversation. And if you're afraid, tell me you're afraid. Tell me what you don't understand.
I was just thinking that as you were saying that.
And people want to be, you know, they want to be politically correct. And so they, because they want to be politically correct, they don't want to say anything, right? Or they don't want to make you feel bad. Well, ask me, what is it like to be poor but nothing? What is it like to do this? What is it like to,
it's okay.
You know, I could tell you about the 31 job interviews that I went on before anybody would hire me. And I had more experience than any person coming out of college, whether, you know, in like the Hollywood entertainment arena. I had 4 internships. I had, you know, people that were, you know, like the president of MTV giving me recommendations. Everybody was going to hire me for free. But then when they would pay, I became a liability. And all they saw was, what kind of health insurance do you need? What kind of insurance do you need?
Oh,
what
God.
Not like, oh, look at
and
all
do you
the
feel
work
like
you've
that's
done.
Changed,
I think we
though?
Have to
do
get
you,
past that.
Do you feel
that.
Like it is changing a little bit?
I don't think it has changed. I think that, you know, there's a stat that's running around where, the disabled is, you know, getting hired today because of work from home. Well, that's because you don't have them in your office and you have less liability. And so,
I'm
thrilled that you're hiring more people within
the
community and that we're able to
share. Systemic problem.
But you did it during a time where maybe people didn't have to identify. And I think that, you know, I call it the new coming out party. We need a self-ID campaign where we are saying, yes, I'm disabled and I'm proud of it. And I don't mind on that sheet saying, yes, I'm disabled.
Wow.
Every corporation can give out a definition of what that means to them or the kind of, you know, you could go to the CDC and you could just pull the definition from there. It becomes less frightening once you define what it is. And so I'm not going to be satisfied until we have CEOs everywhere. I'm not going to be satisfied till we're included everywhere, or, you know, there's not a DE&I campaign that is not included. You know, there's not there shouldn't just be the launch of an ERG. Yep. You know, like it should be part of when you're launching every other ERG, this should be part of that. Yep. We shouldn't have the smallest budgets when we're the most diverse,
right?
You know, in community out there. And so I think that it's just a matter of educating. And if I am one of many that are here to educate you and inspire yeah. you, then that's my role in life.
That's
I'm here to do.
Well, it's an incredible time. And I do feel like there are rooms, there are humans, there are companies that being able to connect with you, which I'm going to help facilitate because
Thank
I love
you.
The idea of being able to open up relationships that you may or may not have already
Thank
to
you.
Really facilitate that further. And that's why I wanted to, you know, dig into that. I mean, there's a million and other conversation topics for us around
right.
everything, but sadly we're running low on time, so we might have
yeah,
to
yeah no like, but it's like your book cover says, like, what are you waiting for?
Yeah,
what are we waiting
what are
for?
We waiting we're not, for and that's why like this conversation is front and center. It's important. It's now. And you know
yeah.
what do we need to do?
It's just time. Like we live in a world where we can socialize messages where we were not able to do that before. And so yeah. I don't want to wait I don't want to wait for a revolt or a revolution yeah. or something horrible to happen to somebody.
No,
and therefore then the media takes notice. It's
yeah.
like, no, we're all people. We need to be included no matter the color of our skin or the kind of mode of transportation we have
yeah.
or our socioeconomic, like we're still people. We still all matter. And I think that that's really the message that I want to get across, and that we can be successful. And I think that people are afraid of success no matter what, color or shape or
yep.
country
yep.
you're from. We're all yep. afraid of success,
yep.
but we shouldn't be afraid of just talking to people and including them in 100%. A conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we wrap things up, which I hate
okay.
to even do because I feel like we're just skimming the surface
I
at
know.
This point, and we may have to come back for a part two on this.
We will.
Honest,
I love a part two.
Yes. But I'm going to sort of take us out with a fun question. And
okay.
this is something that I just always love to explore with the human side of every one of my guests. You have done some really incredible things in your career and your life and met some pretty amazing people. Have you ever stopped to think that if you were to have a dinner party, 3 or 4 really special people that you would love to have around that dinner table to break bread, drink a glass of wine or maybe a tequila with, and just get to know better or be inspired by and just have that opportunity to spend several hours with in that conversation? Who might those people be?
Okay, who would my 3 invites be? Angelina Jolie, I think that she gets a bad rap and people don't really understand her. And I think that she has given herself to the world.
Yeah.
And so I want to understand from her, and I want to have a conversation with her, is the balance of, you know, living in this social society, being, you know, an actress, being married to Brad Pitt. Hello, what was that like?
Yeah.
and, being an advocate. You know, and all the amazing things that she does and
yeah.
the things that
yeah.
she's done for children.
Yeah.
Who else? There is a woman, and I know her, and I love her, and I would invite her to any dinner table. Her name is Caroline Casey. And she is the founder of an organization that's called the Valuable 500.
Wow.
And she wants to put disability on the map of Fortune 500 companies. And she has.
Fantastic.
And so her, just because she is just so fabulous and incredible. And then Dolly Parton.
Oh, I love it.
Obsessed with Dolly Parton. You know, she does so much good. I don't think that people really know all
like
the music.
Angel.
That
she's like an
right?
angel.
She's an angel.
She's like an angel. I mean, she just floats above it all, doesn't she?
Yes.
I love that.
And
she's
I mean,
saying
who doesn't?
Her name brings a smile to anybody's face, right? She exudes joy and amazing. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm coming to that one for sure.
I'm coming to that one. And I mean, there's so many more that I would love any of the Obamas to come to my table.
Yeah.
They really have broken ground.
100%. And cheers to that, because you know what? We need more people in this world that are really going to be sure in their conviction and who they are and what they stand for and affecting the world in really positive, wonderful ways. God knows we need so much more of that in our lives.
Yeah, we need positivity. We need to stop the political angst that this country 100%. Has become.
Well, Lauren, I could sit and talk to you, and I'm going to next time I'm in town.
We are.
I'm definitely going to have a nice dinner together and just really hang out again. But I am so grateful for you being on here today and sharing yourself and really the messages that you have shared and are needing to be more open, more curious, more engaged in the dialogue and doing something about it all around us, everywhere, all the time. You are an extraordinary human, and I just am so glad we're reconnected again, and I can't wait to see you in person. And
me too.
Thank you. Thanks for being
here. Thank you. And everybody, just take five. Get to know somebody. 5 minutes.
Love that. Drop mic.
Drop the mic.
Drop mic. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Lots of great stories, interviews, blogs, and content that will inspire you and motivate you to reinvent any part of your life. So tune into the reinventionexchange.com anytime just for a dose of that. And again, Lauren, thank you so much. I love being able to do this with you today.
I loved it, Kathy.
All right. Happy reinventing, everybody. Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.